The middle of the 20th century was the heyday of the pinup girl, when colorful, illustrated images of playful, attractive young women were created for calendars, magazines, and print ads. Pinup girls were also morale boosters during World War II, keeping servicemen company with reproductions painted on the noses of military aircraft. One of the best known of all the pinup illustrators was the St. Paul-born artist Gil Elvgren, who's been called the Norman Rockwell of pinup and glamour art. From the mid-1930s through 1972, Elvgren produced over 500 paintings of beautiful girls and women for the Lewis F. Dow and Brown and Bigelow calendar companies. Although his pinups weren't considered art at the time, today, an original Gil Elvgren painting will sell for $100,000 to $225,000. Sarah Jane Blum Murphy is co-owner of Grapefruit Moon Gallery, an online gallery in Minneapolis and dealer of original pinup paintings by Gil Elvgren and others. She's also one of the authors of the book, The Art of Pinup. I asked her what made Elvgren's illustrations stand out.
I think you have to separate two things. There's what made his work stand out at the time and what made it stand the test of time. They're not exactly the same. When he was working, he was definitely very popular, very well regarded, had a long and successful career. He was working for over 30 years executing pinups for calendars. But what's made him stand out today is partially just that his name has been kept alive because he had a couple of really early boosters who really enjoyed his work. There were people like Charles Martinetti, who wrote the first big book on pinups to actually treat it as a real art form. And he really took a liking to Gil Elvgren. So what you saw is you saw in the 80s and 90s when people were just starting to think, is this, you know, quote-unquote real art? They were seeing examples of Gil Elvgren at a much quicker pace than they were seeing some of the lesser-known artists. So I think that's a lot of why today, when you think pinup, you think Gil Elvgren. As to why he was a technical master or an artistic master, you know, first of all, there's talent. You can never separate a great artist from just being a technical talent. And then there's inspiration. He always took more time to show in his pinup girls a little bit of a scene, a little bit of a story that was really actually kind of positive. It wasn't a cheesecake scenario wherein women were finding themselves embarrassed. It was a cheesecake scenario where maybe they were a little bashful, but they always kind of felt like they had the upper hand, which really has allowed him to be an artist that people still want to look at in 21st century America when our relationship with the idea of looking at a pretty girl might not be exactly as straightforward as it was in 1950.
In looking at the Elvgren girls, there's innocence there, there's a playfulness, but oftentimes there's a... And I think this is kind of getting what you were getting to. You know, these girls have the upper hand. There's a certain mischievousness there in their attitude.
There definitely is. And I think part of that is because what makes great art is great narrative. So, you know, they have to actually be doing something for it to separate out from all the other images that people were barraged with. And also for it to be something you want to look at for a year hanging on your wall. So I think that's part of it. I also think that there's an element of the girls are supposed to be approachable. That was really important to Gil Elvgren. I've never been sure if that's because he was, you know, coming from a place where he had a lot of connection to literally the girls next door. He was using his next door neighbor as a pinup model, or if it was just because that was his personality. But there was this notion that they were supposed to be incredibly recognizable rather than the Hollywood models or the Rita Hayworths or just the glamour girls who seemed incredibly cosmopolitan and beyond reach.
How did Gil Elvgren get into the pinup art illustration? Was it partly because he was originally from St. Paul, and you had those calendar companies there, Brown and Bigelow, and the other one, Dow?
What happened in the early 20th century was that, you know, the pinup genre had to really come into its own. It wasn't a genre that existed of art before there were kind of standalone color calendars or before there were magazines that were, you know, sending out color reproductions to people at a pretty good clip. So as the technology caught up with the demand for seeing sort of beautiful images that you could put up on your wall without having to have money to buy an original painting, all of a sudden there was a huge demand for artists who could paint this. So Gil Elgren went to art school in St. Paul and then in Chicago, and he started just hustling for work. At the time, you know, he graduated art school in the middle of the Depression, so he started hustling for advertising work, any gigs he could get. And his first commission for a calendar company was actually not a pinup. It was the Dion quintuplets, who were these five little babies that were really a miracle to America in the Depression. The notion that you could have five healthy babies born from one woman, it was this real sign of hope. So he got a commission to paint the Dion quintuplets. That kind of got him in the door with one of the calendar companies. And pinups were so popular already by 1936 that he got hired very quickly by Louis F. Dow to start painting one a month. And then his paintings for Louis F. Dow got really incredibly popular during World War II because the company had this genius idea to print them in these little packs of 12 that you could mail overseas to servicemen really cheaply. And he became, because of this essentially marketing gimmick, he became quickly one of the best-known painters in America. So Brown and Bigelow, who was the other calendar company in Minnesota, and was much more well-regarded, stole him away, you know, doubled his salary, and really took him on as their star artist.
What other work did Gil Elfgren do at the time? It wasn't just the pinup girls.
Gil Elfgren worked primarily as a pinup illustrator. He worked consistently as a pinup illustrator from the late 1930s until he retired in the early 70s. But he also was a mainstream advertising illustrator. So when you think about the old trays, the old Coca-Cola advertising trays, those would have Gil Elfgren images on them. Sometimes they, too, had more demure sort of pretty girls or pinup girls, but often they had just scenes of family or scenes of military service people. And then he also did a number of other advertising commissions, which, you know, very often they had a quote-unquote pretty girl on them, but they weren't considered pinup-y in any way. He worked a lot with something that's called the Sunbloom School, which is Hayden Sunbloom was an artist based in Chicago who actually created the Coca-Cola Santa Claus, created that super glossy, super kind of luminous style of advertising where everybody looks like whatever the product they bought just lit them up from within. So he worked a lot with that school and then got a lot of jobs that really developed that advertising ideal.
You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Dakota Midday, Fifth Friday, and I'm talking with Sarah Jane Blum Murphy, co-owner of the Grapefruit Moon Gallery in the Twin Cities. We're talking about the work of acclaimed pinup artist Gil Elfgren. And did his work change throughout his career from the 1930s up through the end?
I'd say that Gil Elfgren had a few defined periods in his career. His first kind of pinup period was when he was working for the company Louis F. Dow, I mentioned. And he was a very, very talented illustrator, but nobody could have, looking at those Dow pinups, ever predicted either the talent he was going to show later in his career or just the inspiration that he was going to be to generations of other artists. What happened after he was stolen away to go work for Brown and Bigelow was they were much more technologically advanced company. They had really firmer standards they held their artists to, and they doubled his salary, which probably made him want to work a little harder on each and every piece for them. So he started working in a larger format. He started really taking the play of color and light and shadow a lot more seriously, and this led to a sort of the high period of his career. And that, I would say, lasted from maybe 1950 to 1965. And then towards the end, he was still doing really great work, but you could see that, he wasn't as young as he was, as he used to be. He wasn't quite as inspired each and every month to do something great. He wasn't, by the late 60s, he wasn't working nearly as often. And perhaps if you're not, at the height of his career, he was probably doing four paintings a month. And towards the end, he was doing maybe one every other month. So that really, you can see that towards the end.
Now, you mentioned that one of the things that makes Gil Elvgren's art unique, his pinups unique, is that he had a narrative that he put them in certain situations, these young women, these girls. Could you give an example or two for listeners who are completely unfamiliar with the work of Gil Elvgren?
I find it hard to imagine, even if you don't know you're familiar with the work of Gil Elvgren, I find it hard to imagine there's almost anybody who's walking around America who actually hasn't seen an Elvgren girl. You can see them on, you know, advertising today. You can't go into any town and not find at least one bar that has an Elvgren girl up. With that said, my favorite story about a specific Gil Elvgren painting involves a model of his, Myrna Hansen, who had been a 1953 Miss USA. And she would sit for him, and her favorite line was, "Oh, it was great. You just kind of hiked your skirt up and said, oops." And that was what it was like to model for a Gil Elvgren painting. The piece she said that about was one where she was supposed to be ice skating. And so it showed her laid across the skating rink, but totally determined to get back up and get back at it and probably get the better of whoever allowed her to drop. So it kind of shows her with her hip out, her skirt pulled up, and just kind of smiling and shaking her head all at once. My other favorite involves a girl in a bowling shirt at the top of her roof climbing up to fix her antenna, and he gave it the incredibly funny name TV Spectacular, because both, you know, she's fixing her antenna because there's something great on TV, and also you got a pretty girl on the roof of your home. That's pretty spectacular.
In looking at these girls, the Gil Elvgren's paintings, these pinup girls, what do they tell us about the attitudes towards women at that time? Do they give us sort of a glimpse into the past?
You can't look at any art from any period of time and not see the time reflected in it. You can see the fashions especially change in Gil Elvgren's work. So you can see as the sexual revolution went on, you can see the skirts getting shorter. You can see a lot more girls actually in shorts or not in sort of the big full skirts that you associate with the 1950s. One of the most interesting things I think you can see reflected in Elvgren's work, if you look at it over time, is you can actually see America getting a little bit more conservative during the 50s, because he started out, and one of the things that he was most well regarded for during his early career with Brown and Bigelow, and even before then, were these just beautiful, luminous nudes he would create for the calendar market. And so every single year he was commissioned to create just one spectacular out-of-this-world nude. And then in the 50s, that dried up because there really was a lot more of a hearth-at-home conservatism. And so there wasn't as much of a market for nude calendars. You also found that after the war, during the baby boom, all of a sudden marketers and the advertising companies that were actually paying for these calendars in the end, they were finding that they were catering more to the market of housewives doing purchases rather than the market of kind of corporate or, you know, companies who wanted to put pinup art on their walls. So they really ended up, companies started shying away from pinup as a whole during Elvgren's career, which is one of the ways it's really unusual that he has managed to have stood the test of time and to have had such a successful career even all the way through the 60s, when pinup wasn't nearly as popular as it had been during the 40s and early 50s.
Now, as you mentioned, Sarah Jane Blum Murphy, Gil Elvgren's work at the time, it was commercial. It wasn't necessarily considered art. Given that, how difficult today is it to find the original paintings that Gil Elvgren made? I imagine that a lot of times they were just sort of, what were they, maybe discarded or just given away?
In the larger illustration art market, one of the most interesting things is that there's certain artists who you can never find their paintings. There are certain artists who they were working so much and so fast and dirty that they would actually flip the canvas over and reuse it, or they would change the face on a painting they'd already done to try to resell it. There were also people who were so competitive with their there were companies that were so competitive that they would slash a razor through a canvas when they were done with it so that nobody could re-photograph it and reuse it. There were more ways to destroy a piece of art than I can even begin to discuss. But Alfren's work was actually, because it was primarily for Brown and Bigelow, and they were already the giant, they were already at the top of the market, they had really strict protocol for what they did, and they vaulted all their paintings. And in the 70s, as their business started to struggle, they sold them off one by one. So more Elfgrens have remained on the market than almost any other illustrator compared to his output, but there are still a lot that are unaccounted for.
How many Gail Elfgrens have you been able to sell or discover at Grapefruit Moon Gallery?
In person, we've actually managed to come across maybe about 12 that we've been able to sell to private clients, and it's been a lot of fun. I have to just be completely honest, and until I saw Gail Elfgren in person, he was not at the top of my list of illustrators. I liked him. You know, I thought he was fun. I could see his obvious talent, but when you're seeing things, a lot of the times when you're seeing the prints, you're seeing things that are 5 inches by 7 inches, and or, you know, 7 by 9, and really doesn't speak to the incredible talent he had with applying paint. The first time I saw an Elfgren painting in person, I was like, oh, this is what everybody's been talking about all these years.
So you really need to see the original oil paintings, the full-size oil paintings, to really grasp his artistry.
I think that's definitely true, and I think there's a lot of artists who, they're considered artists. You know, if you go and you do a gallery show and you have 10 artists, you'll find that the working illustrators who come in to see your show, they'll all gravitate towards one painting. And it won't necessarily be the same painting that everybody else who walks in the door will gravitate towards. But they will always stop and look at an Elfgren.
Well, Sarah Jane Blum Murphy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me. It was a ton of fun.